Welcome to the Tool Shed, a podcast covering all aspects of fantasy baseball to help you win all of your fantasy leagues. From the MLB draft all the way to the show, we're here to help give you the edge in your dynasty leagues. Now, here are your hosts, Eric Cross and Chris Clegg.
Welcome into another episode of the Tool Shed with Clegg and Cross, brought to you by Rotoballer. This is episode 294. Thank you for joining us. I'm your host, Eric Cross. And with me, as usual, is my 80 grade co-host, Mr. Chris Clegg. Chris, how's it going, bud?
It's going. The season started under full swing now. It's tough to watch some fantasy teams that have had blown up starts for several days. But it's all good. It's early. This is a long season. That's important to remember for everybody, is that it is a long season. Don't get too high on the early starts and don't get too low on the poor starts to start the season. So that would be the wisdom for today, is don't overreact to a small sample that we're looking at this early in the year. But it's good to be here. It's good to have baseball back. Minor league, major league, we're doing this thing. And by the end of this week, we'll have all minor league affiliates started back, which is a lot of fun. And I am very much looking forward to that.
As am I, even though there's a 99% chance opening day for Portland gets snowed out, because we're supposed to get a snowstorm Wednesday night into Thursday. And for some odd reason, the minor league schedule makers were like, oh, hey, let's put a 3-game series in Portland, Maine on April 5th through the 7th. Yeah, not smart. Come on now. But we'll see how many of those games we get. And hopefully, if we're going to get that much snow, who knows if we can get the field cleared off in time for that any game of that series. But yes, we do have the season back in full swing right now. It's great to see all the video filling up the timeline. And in regards to the overreactions, the only thing those are good for is just entertaining me when I see them on my timeline, people just freaking out or asking if they should drop this player they drafted in the top 150 because they're off the 0-for-9 start or gave up 8 earned in their first inning or something like that. It's the prime time for overreactions, and they're always very comical. But we had a lot of fun names to talk about today. Some good, some bad, some underrated, a lot of fun ones here. But before we get into all of those, the usual housekeeping. You can find us on Twitter. Chris is at RotoClegg. I'm at EricCross04. Show is at ToolShedPod. If you enjoy this podcast, please rate and review. Make sure you check out both of our personal platforms, thedynastydugout.com and toolshedfantasy.com, for more from each of us throughout the season, including all of our dynasty and prospect rankings. And of course, you got to check out all the great stuff going on over at RotoBaller. Use that code TOOLSHED, gets you 10% off any premium package, baseball, basketball, football, whatever you want. A lot of great content, tools, and more to help you win and have fun this fantasy season. So check that out over at rotoballer.com. All right, Chris, we'll start off with the unfortunate news, with Royce Lewis suffering a significant quad strain. And it sounds like they're going to have him out for at least a month, and then they'll reassess at that time. So this is looking like 2-month, maybe even 3-month absence. At least 2 months, it looks like. Then they'll ramp him back up, and he has to go on a rehab assignment. And we know he's had the 2 major knee injuries already. This is a third. This is not quite as bad as those, but still a third significant lower body injury. We know the talent's there. He's shown us that. He has a million grand slams already in his career. But is Royce Lewis, is it time to put that injury-prone tag on him? Like, I hate to do it for someone so young, but it feels like it's starting to fit, Chris.
Yeah, and typically I don't like putting an injury-prone tag on most players, but I do think that that's becoming the case here. We're talking about Royce. It has been just countless injury after injury, unfortunately, because the talent is there when he's on the field. And at some point, like, the lower body injuries just add up. And you look back and you're like, man, how in the world did he miss so many games? I do think that he is one that is that tag, injury prone, since 2019. So we're looking at, I know they technically didn't play the minors in 2020, so we don't have to count that year, but he was hurt. He missed all of 2021. He had just around 200 plate appearances in 2022. And then last year, he got close to 300. So you certainly had the hopes he could rebound and put up at least like 550 this year. But I think at the end of the day, like, it's probably looking like Royce Lewis maybe gets like 450 if we're lucky. And that's not even factoring in him potentially missing more time for another injury, which could be the case. Now, when Lewis is on the field, it's elite production. There's no denying that. Last year, 155 WRC plus across 58 games. He had 15 home runs and stole six bases. Drove in 52 runs because half those homers were grand slams. He put up a 309 batting average. The stuff is really good with Lewis, but man, I'm not sure I want anything to do with Royce Lewis at this point because he can't stay healthy. I know he's still young. He's still 24. He won't be 25 until this summer in June, but I don't know. It's certainly fair at this point to just want to avoid Royce Lewis altogether because he cannot stay healthy at all.
So what I was just realizing, his nickname is Dr. Evil. Did you know that?
I did not know that.
I saw that on his BREF page, Dr. Evil. That is a great nickname, and his lower body is being rather evil these days. And I just tallied it up. I know you could break down, but you know, if we include, obviously, the missed 2020 year, he has 494 total, this is minor leagues plus major leagues, plate appearances since 2019. So we're talking a half decade here. Yeah. Obviously, no 2020 season, as we all know. But just because of all the injuries, like, that's not a lot of plate appearances under your belt there. And now he's going to miss another 7-8 weeks or maybe even longer. Who knows when we see him back? That's, you know, best case scenario is probably 7-8 weeks. We'll see how he recovers. You know, quads can be tricky. But yeah, it's just, if it was like random, I don't know, what would you feel more comfortable with, Chris? If it was like random injury, let's say like a knee, a hand, and, you know, some like a elbow or all lower body. I'm not sure what I'm more concerned by.
The random ones, it's okay. At least there's, you can explain some of them, which is good, but it's been constant stuff around, obviously, the leg area, the lower body. He did have an upper body injury last year, but it's just been look up and down the injuries, and it's like knee, oblique, hamstring, quad. It's just not good. I think that if they were like freaky, like he got hit on the hand by a pitch and, or I don't know, like freakish things that happen like that or is one thing, but for Royce Lewis, it's not that at all. It's like constant, like non-contact stuff. Right. And that's not good in my opinion. Like when you get those kind of injuries consistently, I don't like to see that at all.
I'm starting to wonder if this is like a Minnesota thing too. And they've been able to keep Byron Buxton healthy. Now you got Royce Lewis. Kirilloff has dealt with so many injuries. I know they're all various, but they have a hard time keeping anybody healthy up there. And obviously they're without Yoan Duran right now and other minor players as well. But yeah, this was a big blow. Obviously valued as a top 50 guy for dynasty purposes. And now who knows? The talent's top 20, but like we had to push down other guys because of their injuries. We got to push down Royce Lewis. But in the meantime, Minnesota brought up one of their top prospects, Austin Martin, who, you know, while he hasn't quite lived up to, you know, being a top five pick as he was back in that short and five round 2020 draft when he was drafted fifth overall out of Vanderbilt, you know, he still had some value here and there or some good seasons in the minor leagues. Like last year, at 260 with a 381 OBP, 19 steals, and 282 plate appearances. Most of that was with AAA St. Paul. Chris, the power hasn't really been there much at all. He's probably only like an 8-10 homer guy, something like that, but always has had a good OBP. His career 388 OBP in the minors was near 500 in college, 474. Can run, so he provides value in that way, but who knows if he's even going to start full time? They have other options they can plug in while Lewis is out. So what are you thinking here with Austin Martin? Anybody you'd be looking to target in dynasty leagues right now?
I think in the deepest league, like, it's viable. Martin is interesting. I think Martin went from being a obviously very high expectation type prospect to failing those expectations rather quickly. And it put a sour taste in a lot of people's minds, at least, and they've written him off. He was a very high draft pick. He went fifth overall in the 2020 draft out of Vanderbilt. there was a lot of hype around the name Austin Martin for good reasons. The performance in college was really good, and he never really put up like gaudy numbers or anything, but there was a really good feel to hit. There was good speed, and there was some decent power too. It hadn't fully blossomed, but people were like, okay, maybe we can see it. He did hit 10 home runs in 2019 at Vanderbilt and had three in 2020 before the pandemic shut everything down after just three series. Martin had such a high floor to hit, and it looked to me and a lot of others like he could be able to be a high floor contributor at the majors that was very safe. We look now 4 years later, and he's finally making that debut. And for a college bat that's so advanced, it's a pretty slow process, especially considering he started in Double A right out of the draft. And I know he obviously no minors in 2020, but he went straight to Double A in 2021 to start the year, which was rather aggressive. Maybe it stunned him a little bit, but he was traded from Toronto to Minnesota as part of the Jose Berrios deal. I look at this profile. I do think that maybe there's some things to like here. I not think he's going to be a huge fantasy contributor by any means, but there was some decent numbers last year. He did put up a 387 OBP. He hit six home runs and 252 plate appearances. So you know, you extrapolate that out. If he gets 550, you're looking at potentially 15 homers. And he also stole 16 bases and 252 AAA plate appearances, which, again, that's a 30-plus season over a full year. And the underlying data is pretty solid, I think. The contact skills have remained good. He had an 84% contact rate and a 90% zone contact rate last year. He had a chase rate of just 17%, which was one of the better chase rates in the minors. The OBP skills, really good there. You look at the power profile, okay, it's not the best. He had an 85.5 mile an hour average EV and a 101 mile an hour ninth percentile. So there is some power on the higher end. Like I said, I think it's a 10 to 12 home run bat, but he can steal 30 bases. And if you're in an OBP league, I do think there is a little more value just because he can take a walk. So from that standpoint, I look at Austin Martin and say there is use in certain formats, but it would be a deeper format, if anything. So, you know, I would look at it that way. I'm not rushing to add Austin Martin, you know, in every format, but there are some leagues where I do think he's viable.
Yeah, deeper formats for sure. Leagues that have OBP, he gets a little nice little boost there. Because as you know, we both mentioned, he's always been an OBP asset wherever he's gone. Like a 388 in the minor leagues. So that's very solid, of course. But yeah, the upside overall, I think, is limited because he doesn't impact the ball much at all. Maybe he's going to be a poor man's Whit Merrifield or something like that. Maybe that's an outcome we're looking at here with Austin Martin. So yeah, deeper formats, OBP, I could see going after him there. But that's really about it. And this next guy, the other kind of call up over the last couple of days, I have even less interest in. I used to be a big fan of, well, not a big fan, but I used to like Ben Brown a decent amount. He was like a back end top 100 prospect for me at one point, but the command and control has really just fallen off entirely. He was never a pinpoint guy, but it wasn't an issue either. Like you look at in 2022, in 104 innings between high A and double A, the walk rate was only 8.3%. That's around average. But then last year, it jumped nearly double. It's in AAA. It was 15.8% overall. He had 51 walks in 72 and two-thirds innings for AAA Iowa. Still can miss bats. He's always been a guy that's missed bats, 30% or so clip. But I'm concerned about just how the walk rate has absolutely bottomed out here over the last 18 months or so. And I thought this even before he got absolutely blown up in his first appearance. So you know, that hasn't changed my thought whatsoever. But I don't see any long-term value here. He's probably up for a couple of starts. Maybe gets blown up again and gets sent back down. So Ben Brown, not a target for me. But what say you, Chris?
Yeah, I'm not overly excited about Brown. He does have a pretty good arsenal. But at the end of the day, it's all about the command with Ben Brown in the strike, though, and really the health, too. Like, he has not been the picture of health at all. So that's obviously a bit of a concern, too, when you look at it and say, okay, like, this guy has not stayed healthy really at all at any point of his career. and you look a little bit more under the hood and you look at the profile, and certainly the strike throwing is not what you want to see from Brown. He's been below average strike thrower for most of his career. And yeah, you mentioned it, the walk rate really high. The stuff is good when he's healthy, but at the end of the day, you have to be able to throw strikes to be a serviceable starter in the majors. And with the command and control and with the injuries, I just have issues and concerns with Brown being a regular starter long term. I am pretty curious to see how it works out, because I do think the secondaries are pretty solid. And it comes with a pretty good fastball. Like, he's like a 96 mile an hour fastball, but I just want to see more strikes. And if he can do that, maybe I'll buy back in. But right now, I am not rushing out to get him by any means.
Yeah, I'm wondering how many more appearances does he make? People thought he'd slot right into that rotation because, you know, you got Justin Steele out, already had Jameson Taillon out. So it was down to Hendricks, Wicks, Imanaga, and Javier Assad. Need one more player there. Maybe it's Brown. We'll see. They don't have anybody. Now, I don't think they're going to bring up Cade Horton quite yet. Maybe it's Hayden Wesneski. He's still in the mix there too. But you got to figure they get Brown another outing or two here. But yeah, I'm not really looking forward to getting him in any league. I'm avoiding for now until he shows that he can curb that walk rate and get back to the Brown we saw more so in 2022 than we did in 2023. But another player that is definitely hot to start the season. He was hitless today, but he had three home runs in his first two games before the 0-for-3 today. That's Joey Loprofito with the Houston Astros. You know, outfielder, first baseman, second baseman, can play all over. And this was why I have ranked him highly over the last year. He's a little older, sure, but that power-speed blend is legit. He has 25 home runs and 25 steals over his last 125 games, and he's shown that consistent power-speed blend in the minor leagues. And still not sure quite exactly where he fits into the picture here in Houston, but his versatility will certainly help him. And who knows how long they, you know, stick with starting Jake Myers in center field. I could see him, you know, moving to a, you know, bench outfielder or a fourth outfielder role, then bringing up Joey to play there. Who knows? But whenever that happens, you're going to want Joey Loprofito on your team, because that is a very fantasy friendly profile. It could come with multi-position eligibility, which is a nice little added cherry on top of this Sunday. And he's going to be obviously in a good park, good lineups. A lot of positives here for Joey. If you can, you know, afford to stash, you got deeper benches, you can stash him right now. Obviously, in dynasty leagues, he should be, unless you're in a shallower league, he should already be rostered. But, you know, maybe you could still go out and try to acquire him now for a reasonable price tag, because I think, Chris, the perceived value with Loprofito still isn't as high as it should be.
Yeah, it's rather interesting. I don't quite understand why he doesn't get more love. I think that Loprofito is just a very solid player. And you factor in his versatility, too. That only helps his case. We're looking at a former seventh rounder, but he's consistently gotten better year over year. Last year was a huge year for him. He made it to AAA, hit 25 homers, 27 stolen bases on the year. And he slashed 278, 370, 510. That's really good production. We can say the power played up due to being in hitter-friendly environments. Okay, the exit velocities were still pretty respectable. He's got above-average power. He's got good speed and instincts on the base paths. He stole 27, as I mentioned, but he was caught just four times. And the speed shows in the field, too. Like, he's so versatile. He moves well. He played all outfield spots. He played second base. He played first base. And the contact rates were fine. The AAA numbers last year were not as good as they were all year, but I'll take the full year versus just the smaller sample in AAA. But Loprofito is just going to be a dude that maybe he does play a utility role, and that may work in your favor. But it's a bat that's got a lot of juice with a lot of speed. This is a very fantasy-friendly profile. Like, he's your friendly neighborhood utility-type bat that's going to provide. So that's what Joey Loprofito is, a guy that you want on your teams. I think that he should be rostered everywhere, and I wouldn't be shocked if we see him up in the majors pretty soon. I thought he was going to break camp with the team. They spoke very highly of him all spring. He put up really good numbers all spring, and then he didn't make the team. I was a little shocked, but yeah, if the performance keeps up, they're not going to be able to keep him down long.
No, they're absolutely not. And he's going to rank very highly in my first prospects to stash article on RotoBaller, which is out today on Monday when you're listening to this. So I'm not sure where exactly I'm going to slot him, but it's going to be very high. I'm going to finish it after we finish recording this podcast, but it's going to be high. And yeah, you're going to want Loperfido, and he should be up. I think if he's not up by the end of May, I would be absolutely shocked, and it's probably earlier than that. But we shift from one underrated prospect to an underrated major leaguer, and this is something I was guilty of too. I think we undervalued Junghoo Lee's power, and that's not me saying that he's going to all of a sudden be a 30 homer guy, but a lot of people were like, oh, he's contact and very minimal power. Yeah, he's still in contact first, but what we saw in spring training and so far in the first handful of games of this season, he's got a little bit of pop in the bat. He's already average EV entering today is 96.2. Again, small sample size, I know, but 55.6% hard hit rate. He's hitting the ball hard, and this is something he was doing in spring training as well. Maybe Lee is a 15 to 20 homer bat. I think people were kicking him for 10 to 12. Maybe he's 15 to 18, maybe even for it to 20. And that changes the kind of thought process on Lee's value exponentially, because if you're looking at a 280 or better hitter that gets on base a lot, he had three walks today. I didn't do anything really with the bat, but did get on base three times via walk. He's going to be leading off. He's going to be getting on base, scoring some runs. Maybe if he's 15, 20 home runs, you're looking at someone that's not that far off from like Brian Reynolds. So, yeah, I think we undervalued Lee's power, and I think he's still a pretty sneaky dynasty target, but that window is going to close pretty quickly if he keeps hitting the way he has been.
Yeah, I agree. I think his window to get him is only shrinking. So if you can get him sooner than later, like I probably would, I am very interested by what he's done so far. Actually, you look at like the launch angle overall looks pretty good. He's actually put up a lot of ground balls. Like the game he had a home run, everybody was talking about how he was smoking the ball or whatever. I guess it was Saturday. Like he was hitting it hard, but he had like three balls with like negative 30 degree launch angles. So that's something to watch. I'm not saying that's going to be a part of his game. We're talking about small samples across the board. Lee is pretty solid, rounded player. We know he's going to make contact. It's just how often does he get to this power? I think that he may be somebody to look to get. Maybe it's not too late. At worst, if you acquire him, like he's got a very high floor to hit, which is good because the contact skills and the OBP skills are going to be there. And he should give you, like, at worst, like 10 home runs and maybe 10 stolen bases.
Yeah, no, I think that's very fair for sure. All right, moving over to a couple of intriguing young arms here, starting with Jared Jones. I know we talked about him fairly recently, but made his major league debut and gave up three earned runs, in 5 2/3 innings. But 10 strikeouts, whip under one, and a 22 whiffs, which were the best for that day. It might be the highest number so far this season, I believe. And it didn't. So basically 21 of those 22 whiffs were on the four seam slider. Do you think he can make this work, Chris? He's only really working in the curveball and the changeup a combined 15-18% of the time on the most part, going with that slider fastball combo pretty heavily as he has all spring and most of his minor league career as well. But obviously it's not a Spencer Strider-esque combo, even though it's pretty damn good. Do you think he can make this work? And after that, I think it's time to play a little who you got with Jared Jones. But before we do that, what do you think on Jared Jones right now after that debut?
Yeah, he's been so good. Like he's gotten better and better pretty much every year of his career. Talent was there when he was drafted in 2020 in the second round. He was a two-way guy, very talented, big arm, and he just got better. I posted the video the other day, or I guess it was Saturday at this point. The days all blend together, but a couple of his starts when he was in Greensboro in 2022 and how the stuff was really good, but it would tail off. But then 2023, like he proved that he could be a starter, which I didn't think he could be when I saw him in 2022. But last year, the velo was ticked up. He was holding it deeper in the starts. Like just across the board, Jones made improvements and was like, okay, this guy is legit. Then what does he do this spring? He comes out looking even better. with the big fastball, it's even up a tick or two. It's got more ride. The slider is looking really good. So I look at this profile and I think, okay, I think that Jared Jones is really onto something here. And I think there's potential for him to be a really good arm. He gets, you talk about the fastball velocity too, but he gets elite extension as well, like big time extension from that fastball. Like the fastball extension was 7.6 registered, which is seems like a lot for his size, but man, oh man, is that wild to see, because that allows that to play up even more. So I'm betting on Jones. I think that he's going to be a very good arm. I think, and when I re-ranked preseason, like in during the spring, I put him in like the second tier of arms. Of pitching prospects, at least not MLB, but pitching prospect wise, is I had Skeens and I had Jackson Jobe. But I thought Jones looked like he belonged in that tier with that like Cade Horton type and Robbie Snelling type, Ricky Tiedemann and Andrew Painter, like those type of guys that he's 22 years old and he's looking like that. I think that it's fair to put him in that same tier and look at it and say, maybe Jared Jones is a really good arm.
Yeah. Every time I look into him, every time I dig into him, watch a start, I seem to be buying in more and more. But let's do a little who you got here, Chris, and I'll ask you. So you've been a little bit higher on Jones this entire time as opposed to me. Let's go. I think this is a pretty fair range right here. Let's go. Let's start with Jones or Taj Bradley long term.
I think I like Jones better at this point, honestly. And that's, I don't think that's recency bias at all. I think that I'd gotten a little high on Taj Bradley and I dropped him a little bit, but yeah, I think I'm going Jared Jones there.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Jones or Ryan Pepiot?
I think I'm prefer Pepiot, but okay. It's pretty close.
All right. Jones or Emmett Sheehan?
Prefer Sheehan.
All right. So I feel like I'm in the right range here.
Yeah, that's right around there.
I think, Bryce, let's do one more here. Is there any other pitchers in here? How about Jones or Reese Olson?
I think I'm going Jones for the upside, even though I do like Reese Olson a good bit.
All right, last one, Jones or Shota Imanaga?
I'm a little more confident in Imanaga right now. So I'll go that way. I think Jones has the upside to pass every name you mentioned. I will say that. I think that if all clicks, then yeah, he's going to be above all those names.
Yep, I could definitely see that. But yeah, that's in my 175-ish range of my dynasty rankings, which is where I was thinking you'd be as well. So that was a good spot for him. Another name here that looked really good at a young arm. That was the opening day starter for the White Sox. But hey, he looked really damn good. And that was Garrett Crochet. Another three or four like relievers turned starters this year, obviously with Puck and DL Hall. Garrett Crochet had another one there and struck out 8 and 6 innings, only gave up one run. Looked really damn good. Another kind of like similar to Jones, where he's kind of going four seam slider very heavily, 87% in that first outing. Only mixed in 11 total cutters and changeups, but slider was very good. Four seam averaged 97.6 in that outing. So he was really getting a lot of weak contact and a lot of swing and miss on those two pitches, the four seam and the slider. What are your thoughts on Crochet long-term, Chris? There's not like a long track record here. Yeah, he had some relief outings over the last handful of years. You missed all of 2022. Pretty good reliever back in 2021. Had a sub-3 ERA, 65 Ks and 54 and a third. But he still hasn't eclipsed 20 innings over the last 3 years because of injury. High upside, low floor, very risky. How are you valuing Crochet right now moving forward?
That's a very tough one to answer because he's such an interesting profile. To see Crochet go from the first round pick he was at Tennessee in the 2020 draft, 11th overall, threw him straight in the bullpen. Like, he debuted that year in the bullpen. We assume, okay, this guy's just going to be a reliever. And that was the case for him in 2021. He threw 54 relief appearances and made no starts. It was good. I really struggled to believe that Crochet could be a starter, come back and be a starter at this point, because he has not started consistently in 4 years at this point. So I wondered, like, could he do it? But to come out and throw six innings like he did was rather impressive. He did not issue a walk. He struck out eight batters, allowed just one earned. I'm pretty curious to see how this goes. And I will say, I'm still not overly confident that Crochet is going to be a great starter long-term, because I really don't know how this is going to play. Can he sustain inning start over start? Yeah, he can do it one start to begin the year. But as we get in June, like, how is he doing workload-wise? And is he able to sustain that? The good news is the fastball velo was good in the start. He threw 40 fastballs, averaged near 98. So you like to see that. That's actually up from what we saw last year. It was hurt coming back from injury, but nonetheless, that's pretty solid. The slider looked good. It missed bats. And both the fastball and slider missed bats, which is an encouraging sign. He throws the cutter also to Bridge. He throws a very hard cutter at 93, 94. I am not going to go crazy all the way in on Crochet, but I am pretty interested to see where this goes. And if I miss out, so be it. I miss out. I'm not sure we're looking at a super high-end arm if all clicks, but he's a fun one, to say the least.
Yeah, it's going to be really fun to see, like, how this works out between Garrett Crochet, AJ Puck, and DL Hall long-term. All the pretty similar guys, high upside lefties that have had some command and control issues, some injury issues, transitioning from reliever to starter this year. So it'll be fun to see how this all plays out with those three. But yeah, there's plenty of upside with Crochet. I'm a little hesitant, though, with him. I'm not sure. Out of these three, I'm more confident in Puck. And then Crochet and Hall, I'm pretty close on. Definitely behind Puck out of these three, though. But moving over to a veteran arm now that has looked really good for almost a full year now, especially the second half of last year, and then opened up with a dominant outing against Seattle the other day. That's Nick Pivetta. First of all, that was a really fun pitcher's duel to watch between Nick Pivetta and George Kirby on, was that Friday night or Saturday night? I can't remember this. Friday night, I believe it was. And Pivetta, 10 Ks, only gave up one run over six innings. And this is a continuation of what we saw second half of last year, where he was one of the better pitchers on all of baseball, really like a top 10 pitcher over the second half of last season. And yeah, I think a lot of people, including myself, were like, all right, that was fun. Good job for yelling a pat in the back, Nick Pivetta. But let's see you do it again. And yeah, it's been one start, but hey, Nick Pivetta still looks really good. And if you look at the numbers from last year, he had four pitches with a whiff rate above 30% last year, and he transformed himself this year. He's gotten really sweeper heavy, not like too heavy, but 33.3% in that first outing. So he's sweeper and then four-seamer, cutter, curveball, all above 19%. He's dropped the four-seam usage a little bit. Cutter usage has gone up. Sweeper usage has gone up. He ditched the slider. So he's been making some changes to that arsenal. That was already a pretty solid arsenal, and now he has these four pitches that had all had a whiff rate above 33% in that first outing. So he's been able to miss bats consistently. And he keeps the walk rate down. You know, it got better as the year went on, and he's always been in like the 8-9% range. I'm not saying he's going to be an ace, but man, Chris, I'm not sure. Maybe Nick Pivetta is a borderline top 25 arm moving forward. Would that surprise you?
A little, because it's Nick Pivetta, but watching him, no, I don't think that would be shocking, because he finally looked like that pitcher that could really take that step forward that the Red Sox so desperately need. He looked incredible in the start, and I came with a different pitch mix usage and leading the way with the sweeper, which I like to see. He threw that cutter a little bit more, which was huge. And so to see the four-seam used less, and significantly less, I think paid pretty good dividends for him. And the four seam's always been a pretty solid pitch, but to lead the way with a sweeper, which is one of his better pitches, like, I'm a fan. I like this kind of move that he's made to change the arsenal, especially knowing that he can get swings and misses early in counts with that pitch. I'm all about him making this kind of move or adjustment in the arsenal. Generated a lot of whiffs, obviously had a lot of strikeouts. He had 10 across six innings. He kept the control and command really good. He limited his walks. I look at Nick Pivetta and say, okay, like you did something different. You tried some new things and it worked. Like, let's keep doing this and let's see where it goes. Keep leading with a sweeper. I think when you need to go to the four seam, you can go to the four seam. But also having that cutter in the arsenal is really nice. That pitch is obviously up to 89 now. It was up from last year around 88. And he throws a curveball on occasion to left-handed batters. I look at Pivetta and I'm pretty intrigued by what he did. And I'd say he's somebody to keep a close eye on because the arsenal did look really strong.
Man, a lot of Red Sox arms have looked really strong so far. Bayo didn't miss many bats in his outing, but Cutter Crawford looked really good in his start going right after. Nick Pivetta did. And Garrett Whitlock today on Sunday looked pretty damn good, too. He had 8 strikeouts in 4 2/3 innings. So far, so good for a lot of Red Sox arms here. And Whitlock's another one I'm really, you know, intrigued to see, you know, how this kind of plays out with him going into the rotation full-time. Because as we knew with him and Houck, they had been going back and forth between roles here. Now they seem to both have settled on them in the rotation. Both looked pretty good this spring. Woody looked really good so far in his first outing of the season. And I think both of those, there's a lot of good targets right now in this Red Sox rotation. Andrew Bailey's working his magic and Kyle Boddy, a lot of good people in that org now that they've added for this offseason primarily. So really excited about a lot of arms, Pivetta especially, Witty too, and even Houck a little bit as well. So hopefully Bayo can start missing more bats though, because that's been the issue with Bayo. But moving on here from the Red Sox here, we're going to close up the show with a little the worry-o-meter or something like that, however we want to call this. There are three names here, one we already alluded to earlier, but three names that got off to really poor starts this season, and maybe there is a cause for worry with these three guys. Now, let's start with the one we already mentioned briefly earlier, and that's AJ Puck. Let's do on a scale of 1 to 10, how worried are we, Chris? For me with Puck, I'm only about a 4. I'm not one that thinks that his early career walk rate issues are all of a sudden back, because he hadn't been above 10% walk rate since 2019. And last year was a career best 5.2%. And maybe that's never going to happen again, but yeah, I don't think he's going to all of a sudden balloon to 12%. Yeah, he had 6 walks in the first outing. It was terrible. It blew up your ratios. Not good. But I'm still, as I mentioned, I'm still the highest on all these in upside relievers going to starters that we see this year. I'm the highest on Puck, so I'm still a believer. So I'd say only about 3 out of 10 on the worry scale.
Yeah, I was not the highest on Puck anyway, but I'm still going to sit here and tell you that it's going to be like a 4, because at the end of the day, yeah, I don't think we see him walk 6 batters again. That's obviously really wild. You would love to have seen better. You didn't need the 6 walks and 4 earned that he allowed over 2 innings on your team and that nice 4.5 whip. But I will say, location-wise, it's pretty good. The four seam was located pretty well up. The sweepers down and away. That's what you want to see. The sinkers were inconsistent, and the splitters were a bit inconsistent too, but he led the way with the sweeper and four seam, and those pitches were located. I'll take good location over results in the first start and say, okay, Puck back starting, like, I'm not overly concerned, but I'm also not thinking that he blossoms into an ace or anything.
Yeah, I think he could be like a top 50 guy, probably one that always has a little bit higher ratios, but I hate to always use Robbie Ray as a comparison. Maybe he's like a Robbie Ray type with a lot of strikeouts and so ratios. I think that's what we could be looking at. We'll see. Obviously, he has a long way to go before he's on that level, but definitely has the upside to be there. I see, yeah, both of us aren't overly concerned right now. Let's go to the most notable name on this list, Aaron Nola, who's coming off an ERA of 4.46 last year, has an ERA above 4.4 in 2 of the last 3 years, 3.25 sandwich in the middle of those two, and gave up a lot of runs in his first outing there, 4 1/3, 14.54 ERA, 3 whip. Obviously, it's just one outing, but not a very good season debut from Mr. Nola. How worried are you on Nola, Chris?
I think there's a good reason to be concerned about Nola, and it's so weird to see. He was so steady, one of the most steady pitchers in baseball for years. I know there were a couple rough seasons in there, and the rough 2021 season can be written off to several factors. And at the end of the day, the 4.63 ERA was fine, but he still had 223 strikeouts that year. He's had 200 strikeouts every year dating back to 2018, excluding obviously 2020, but he struck out 96 over 71 innings in 2020. The innings have been huge for him, but the home runs have begun to bite him. Last year allowed 32 home runs, which was not good at all. That was a very high number. He allowed 2 in 4 1/3 in his first start and 7 earned, 12 hits. Like, this is not the Aaron Nola of old. He got that big contract, and I don't know. I am a little bit concerned about Nola. I think that this is not my grade on Nola is not off of one start, but seeing more of the same, I got to put it at like 6 right now with potential for it to rise up to like 8 in like a month's time, because we certainly wanted to see more. We want to see Nola come back and look like the pitcher that we saw in 2022, not 2023. But seeing more of the same, and considering spring training was not the best for him either, there were some rough outings in spring training, I'm a little bit worried about Aaron Nola.
Yeah, I am too. I might even, it feels weird to say 7 or 8, but that's where I'm at. And I'm not saying that me saying a 7 or 8 isn't me saying that I think he's all of a sudden not going to be useful for fantasy. That's not it. But I don't know if that ace Nola is walking through that door. Maybe it's because I've seen him on, maybe it's just bad luck, but every time I've seen Nola live, which has been 3 times now, including last year in, what was it, August, and then this year in spring training, he just hasn't looked good. Like if you didn't know who he was, you came in not knowing anything about him or his previous year stats, and you just watched him in that one outing, or even last year, you would be like, man, this guy's like, and obviously Nola's better than, so nobody out there get mad at me for saying that, but you know, he isn't missing as many bats as he used to. The K rate dropped a good amount last year, and he's, you know, getting hit fairly hard as well. I don't know. I still think he could be maybe a high 3, low 4 ERA guy and 25% K rate, but it wouldn't surprise me if Nick Pivetta finished the year with more value than Aaron Nola. And these are guys that were drafted, you know, over 100 spots apart. But I just, every time I see Nola, it's just, he's getting hit around. He's not missing as many bats as he used to. Yeah, the volume's still there. But when does that start to catch up to him, Chris? Like, we've seen that with other pitchers where all these guys that have been like these consistent workhorses for the last handful of years are going down. Sandy, Cole, is Nola next? It's hard to feel safe about any pitchers, even the more reliable pitchers that we've seen with Aaron Nola. So, yeah, I think he's still going to be good, but is he going to be great anymore? I think that's what I'm questioning, and that's why my number's a little bit high, even though that does feel pretty weird to say so. But last name here is a name that was probably the most hyped-up pitching name of the kind of offseason and into draft season. You saw his ADP each month rise and rise. He was almost a top 100 pick during mid to late March drafts. That's Bailey Ober from the Minnesota Twins. He got absolutely annihilated in his first outing of the year. Gave up 8 runs in 1 1/3 innings. He was absolutely lit up. Yeah, it's one start. Were you at an Ober? Were you buying in at least as much as others with the hype, Chris? Or where are you at with him moving forward?
I think that Ober's going to be fine. I don't think a pitcher like Ober just lost command completely. And I think that's what we saw in his blow-up outing. And yeah, it's not fun to watch these guys get obliterated, especially when you get obliterated by the Twins. By the Royals. He is on the Twins, obviously, duh. But you don't want to see those things happen, but you look and Ober's command just wasn't there. And for somebody that's been a command specialist their entire career, I don't think that just goes away. Like, he left a lot of four seams over the heart of the plate, which obviously didn't bode well. The cutters were located inconsistently. The changeup was all over the place. Couldn't control the slider. I don't think he just lost that, honestly. The velo's still up on the fastball, which is good. Like, he was still up 1.1 miles an hour, which is what we saw in the spring, what got people excited. So you like to see that. The cutter's a new pitch. I think it works out fine. The changeup was fine overall. Yeah, I think that at the end of the day, like, we look back, this is a blip on a good season. And Ober's not going to be an ace. Nobody ever thought he was going to be an ace, but Ober, I think, is someone that's going to be a steady high floor the rest of the year. People may rage drop him. I'd pick him right up because he's going to be valuable. Unfortunately, I have some shares on teams that he hurt today, but that's life. You move on and it'll be all good. So I'm still in on Ober. My worry on him is like a 1 out of 10.
Yeah, you look at Ober, what he's done over his first 3 years in the major leagues. Walk rate right around 5%. He has an overall K-minus walk rate of 19.8% through his first three seasons, and leading into the start this weekend. Yeah, I'm not really worried. I'd say a 2 on Bailey Ober. And maybe the hype did get a little bit out of control this offseason and into spring training, but I still think Ober could be a top 40 or so arm. Like I said, he has the high floor, ERA under 3.5 each of the last 2 years. And they're going to give him a chance. It sounds like they really like Bailey Ober there in Minnesota as well. So he's going to get a long leash there. I don't think they're going to pull him out of rotation anytime soon. And yeah, I think there's going to be some much better days ahead for Ober. So if you can buy low, if that window did open up or someone did rage drop him, whatever, yeah, definitely go in, buy low, add whatever you need to do to get Bailey Ober, because still a bright future here, and especially this year in 2024. But that's good. That's going to wrap us up. Really fun episode here today. A lot of intriguing names, good mix of names as well. Again, as I mentioned, some good, some bad, but that's how it goes here in the beginning of the season. So hopefully y'all aren't overreacting too much. Just let the season settle in. This is fun to set lineups again, look at standings. I know everyone's already looking at standings. Even if you say you're not, you are. But that is going to wrap us up. Thanks to everyone for tuning in again this episode. We hope you enjoyed it. Make sure to check out both of our personal platforms, thedynastydeco.com and toolshedfantasy.com for more work from each of us. Go check out Rotoballer, and we will see you again later this week. But until then, everyone take care.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.